We're getting an update now on the destructive storms and wind damage that hit our state in recent days. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The National Weather Service confirmed 3 tornadoes Friday, Lincoln County, Oneida County, a third in Marathon County, and then a fourth one was confirmed Saturday morning near New London in the Fox Valley. So what damage did you get in your part of the state? Is your home okay? Did you take shelter? Is your power back on? Join in at 800-642-1234. Rob Mentzer is WPR's Rural Communities reporter, and he joins us now from our studios in Wausau. Rob, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate.
So you traced the path of a tornado across central Wisconsin, going from the town of Knowlton, which is north of Stevens Point, to Shantytown, which is about 15 miles eastward of Knowlton. What did you see? What did you find?
Well, so it's quite clear where the tornado is. You can see from the road where the sort of path that it took, and the destruction of trees and other, you know, like there's a lot of ginseng being grown in this part of the state, right? And so ginseng has covers over it, and that a lot of those were damaged in those fields, as well as trees and, you know, power lines torn in half, power lines down. It was a bad storm.
Well, Wisconsin Public Service has been putting out some numbers on this storm. What do we know about power to customers?
So as of last night at 10 p.m., they said that the power companies, the power group, public service, and We Energies had restored power to about 250,000 customers. But there are still some 41,000 customers throughout the state without power. The power companies are saying that by the end of today, Tuesday, 95% of customers will have their power restored if their actual buildings aren't damaged so badly that they can't get power. But, you know, it still leaves many hundreds, probably thousands, for whom it's going to take days longer. And of course, I mean, you know, it's not as if you get power back and like all the damage is restored. It's going to be a months long or years long process for rebuilding, recovering from the effects.
Do we know if anyone was hurt from these destructive tornadoes?
Well, so this is actually a hard question, because there were several deaths over the weekend that authorities are investigating as perhaps being caused by the storms, but it's not clear right now until those investigations are completed. Like an example of this is an elderly man died in a mobile home fire in Wausau over the weekend. And it's certainly possible that the fire was caused by the storms, a lightning strike or some electrical damage or something. But we just don't know. There were two deaths reportedly under investigation in Trempealeau County. And on Sunday, a man in Oconto County died during cleanup and response efforts. There was also a utility worker in central Wisconsin badly injured during those sort of cleanup efforts.
We're getting updated on tornado damage with Rob Mentzer. He is WPR's Rural Communities reporter. He's based in Wausau. Rob, you talked with people who are in the path of the tornado. Where did you find Eugene Sincera?
Sure. Eugene Sincera and his sister Marie live out in the country, sort of east of Mosinee, maybe a drive of about 40 minutes away from Wausau or so. They were out on Sunday cleaning up their yard. They'd had several big trees come down. The trees had actually missed their house and their shed, so they said that they were feeling pretty lucky, all things considered. And Eugene talked about the experience of having the winds pick up and the tornado approaching.
It was sounded like a freight train. Like, I would say, like a half an hour before it just started turning and boiling, like something was coming.
That's a real scary feeling. I'm sure that all of those emotions of what do you do, where do you go?
Right, they went down took shelter in their basement, as others did, of course, and they were out with a border collie named Frank, and they said Frank was not fazed at all, and they had to coax him down to the basement, but all were unhurt. So
you also went to Knowlton, where you talked with Lorraine Wojcik. What condition was Lorraine's farm in?
The Wojcik farm got the worst of it. Their family's barn and farm shed were completely destroyed in the storms. They were out, as well, with chainsaws out and cleaning up on Sunday. Lorraine said that she expects the family has some tough times ahead.
Well, insurance is going to take a good year and a half before we settle everything. Yeah, because you know how by the time you get through the rubble, write everything down, they take it to the underwriters, they do their thing. By the time whatever we have in our bank in that's what we're going to have to survive on until we get everything done.
Whatever we have in our bank is what we'll survive on. So Lorraine is seeing a long road ahead to recovery.
Right. They have a beef farm and it's a homestead farm. Lorraine's husband grew up there and his parents and grandparents were there. And it's was just leveled. There have been some, announcements of some aid efforts. A bank announced that they'll provide these sort of cheap loans for people who need them to rebuild. And it may well be that the Wojcik farm would be eligible for some of that sort of disaster aid. But you could just see in the way that they spoke about it and sort of how they, out on sort of surveying the damage on Sunday, how, it's how hard it is emotionally to lose these buildings and lose the sort of structures of their farm that's been their life and their livelihood.
Did they lose any cattle?
They didn't think so. some had her phrase was some had left, but they expected to get them back.
How were other parts of the state affected?
So this was one of the things that was actually unique in this, unusual in this storm was just how widespread the damage was. So I was in central Wisconsin tracing one of these tornadoes, but of course there were multiple tornadoes across the state. A lot of the damage was not even from the tornadoes. It was from derechos, these intense sustained wind storms of straight winds. So there was damage from in Eau Claire, across central Wisconsin. Wisconsin Rapids was especially hard hit, Stevens Point area, and then into the Fox Valley, particularly Outagamie County, sort of east of Appleton, was really badly hit. It was quite a storm.
And so these straight line winds aren't necessarily tornado winds, but they are long sustained winds?
Correct. Yes, exactly. So derechos, and there was not one but two tracked across the state. I talked to a spokesman for the power companies who said one measure of the intensity and ferocity of the storm was that they swept across Wisconsin, then crossed Lake Michigan and did a bunch more damage in Michigan, knocked a bunch of other people's power out across the Great Lake.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us and getting us updated.
All right. Thank you.
Rob Mentzer is WPR's rural communities reporter based in Wausau, and he joined us from our studios there. He's been reporting on the powerful storms that battered our state over the weekend. Coming up, we look at how to keep kids safe from online predators. Parents, what questions do you have about online safety? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about kids' online safety on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force is part of the Justice Department, and last year the program conducted more than 71,000 investigations. That resulted in the arrest of about 9,000 people. We're zooming in now on Oneida County, where the Sheriff's Office has been involved in at least a dozen incidents in recent months where children are the target of an online predator. Parents, what do conversations sound like with your kids as they go online? Do you try to keep up with what they do on the internet? What about keeping tabs on their social media? We're at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Terry Hook is captain of investigations at the Oneida County Sheriff's Office. Captain Terry Hook, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So why is your office putting a focus on this? Why is this a priority?
Well, we've always been focused on crimes against children, and this is becoming more and more of a problem in our area and across the state. It's becoming a problem across the state.
Okay, so what do investigations of this nature look like? How do you go about them?
Well, we have several types of investigations. Some of the investigations involve people on sites maybe that children should not be on, seeing kids on these sites, or seeing people, adults within sites that are for children, and contacting the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, who focus on internet crimes against children, and giving them tips. And then they send those tips to us. Some of the tips could be there's been sharing of nude photos or some kinds of information that makes them think that it's a child that's interacting with an adult in a site they should not be on. So then we go through and try to figure out how do we find that child and the person that's sharing information with the child in that site. Some of the other things that we do is target people that would be looking for contact with kids by placing ads in different areas or having contact with people on different apps posing as children.
The internet is always evolving. It's always changing. And just a few decades ago, we didn't have the internet. So what does law enforcement in this realm look like? How do you be prepared with all of these changing in order to catch online crimes?
It's really difficult to keep up because as soon as you think that you understand where they are meeting and that app is the thing that's the cool thing at the time, they change. They go to a different app. So you have to be really paying attention to what's out there, what kids are doing, where kids are going. There was a time when we saw some activity on Craigslist, and then Craigslist changed their format, so then we had to try something different. So we're constantly having to look at new apps that come out and look at different ways, different places that people are contacting each other.
We're talking about kids' online safety with the Captain of Investigations at the Oneida County Sheriff's Office, Terry Hook. Kids and teens, let's hear your thoughts, 800-642-1234. How do you make sure your information and online activity is safe? Are you able to recognize a site that might not be safe? And did you ever feel vulnerable on social media? How have you learned about internet safety? Join in. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. So with school being out, how, you know, kids have some free time to spend with their devices. What should parents keep in mind for their kids when it comes to online safety?
Parents need to make sure that they are looking at their kids' devices and seeing what they're doing. Even video games, kids can their Nintendos and things like that. There's ways that people can contact your kids through these devices. So they should actually be having conversations with their kids about maybe who are they talking to and things like that. And looking at kids' devices, especially their pictures, and making sure that they're not seeing any pictures that are inappropriate or might be on the line of being inappropriate, because those are the first stages that these predators groom children to, is just take a picture of yourself. Just, you know, send me one picture. And then if you are on your child's phone and you see pictures of themselves that make you concerned, you need to be having conversations with them about those pictures and where they're sending them. Also, parents should talk to their kids about the fact that if you send a picture out, that's out there in the internet for the whole world to see forever. There's no real way of getting those pictures back. So that's one of the things I don't think that kids sometimes think about. They think they're sharing a picture with their friend or with somebody that they have met on the internet, and that picture can never be taken back. It's always going to be out there available for other people.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Madeline is joining us from De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. I'm going to be 78 in August. I cannot believe what children are being subject to do over the internet. People my age, most of them don't know what's going on, but I have reason to know. And, you know, instead of spending all the money to go to the moon or Mars, our country should be spending money on getting a control of what's allowed to be on the internet. And these people that, you know, insist that their children have smartphones and these other gadgets where these people can get access to your children, you would not believe so many of you grandparents what they're seeing on the internet.
Madeline sounds very concerned, Captain. What would you tell her and any other people about resources available to help parents and kids?
Well, there is a resource that the Internet Crimes Against Children team, along with the public education, has put out, and it's called Interact, and it's on the, you can look it up on the internet, and it shows parents what to look for when dealing with kids and their resources. Because the problem is, you know, like she was saying, you know, back a long time ago, we didn't have all of these gadgets and all of these different things that we could contact people through. And so for some of us, it's a learning curve. We really have to. And this website, this will help you look at what to look for out there. She is so right about the fact that these people have access to our children, more access sometimes than we do. When we're gone at work during the day and our kids are at home by themselves, they can be contacted by strangers. Unlike, you know, many years ago when we always told our kids stranger danger about meeting people on the street, our kids are meeting strangers in their own houses. And so she is so right about us being aware of what our kids are doing and using this website to help you learn about basic cyber safety is one of the things that you can do as a parent if you feel that, like, you're behind the learning curve and you really don't understand exactly what it is that they're doing.
Have you reached out to other sheriff's departments, other sheriff's offices to find out tips and tools about how other counties are managing this? And what do you find out?
Well, I think that some of them are doing what we are doing, and some of them haven't yet began to focus on this because it does take a lot of manpower to do something like this. It takes a lot of time that's outside of the hours of 8 to 4 because that's when our kids are out there doing this. So I think some of them are using the resources of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force to look at these instead of doing it themselves. It is, like I said, an overwhelming issue that we have to address.
Well, has the Justice Department's effort been helpful to guide states and counties on this growing issue of targeting children?
I believe that they have. They've given us a lot of tools. They provide their staff to us to teach us different, like I said, different apps that they are staying ahead of. They actually we use them to search phones and things for us to help us find, you know, really sometimes what we're talking about is child pornography, and that's at the base of some of this stuff. And so they are the ones that find the child pornography for us because we don't have the specialized people to do that.
And so they would then bring perhaps a tip or a lead to you, a case, and then you start working it on your end?
Correct. And they would get the information from the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, information might be just in Wisconsin, and then the team will figure out which county it's in and then send it to us based on that information.
And then how would you work the case? Where do you start? What do you do?
Well, we start with things like IP addresses, trying to determine where an IP address is. Is it a personal IP address? Is it a public IP address? And then subpoenaing to see where that IP address is. And then moving on to some surveillance of the area where the IP address is used. And those are the kinds of things that we do to try to figure out who's sharing child pornography.
Can you leave us with a message for people who don't assume this is a problem in their community?
Well, that's what we have really been trying to tell people. We're very rural. My thing that I tell people is this is happening even in Oneida County. We've had 12 investigations this year that have already led to arrests of people doing these kinds of things, targeting children. And this is in rural Wisconsin, and it's happening everywhere.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Terry Hook is Captain of Investigations at the Oneida County Sheriff's Office. We've been talking about how to prevent child sexual exploitation and internet crimes against children. Coming up, marijuana remains illegal in Wisconsin, but the sale and use of CBD, which is cannabidiol, an active ingredient in cannabis, that is legal. So what does it do for you? Does your business sell CBD products? How have you seen business change since legalization? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll have a conversation about CBD after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about CBD in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hemp and marijuana are both forms of cannabis, but hemp lacks enough of the active ingredient THC to get people high. Hemp is widely used for CBD oil, which is legal in Wisconsin, marijuana not. And last year was the first year hemp could legally be grown again in our state. So we thought we'd check in on the uses of CBD with your insights, your stories along the way, 800-642-1234. How are you using CBD? Where do you see it used in your community? Hemp growers, what can you tell us about Wisconsin's marketplace for CBD? Are you concerned about hemp growth? Where do you see issues? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Olivia Herkin is a recent graduate of the UW-Madison. She wrote an article as part of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. It's called, In Wisconsin, Users of Cannabis and CBD Are as Close as Main Street. And this story was part of a series created by a class with the help of the center's managing editor, Dee Hall. Olivia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So to explore the reach of cannabidiol in the state, you spent time at the store Kickapoo Kind in the Kickapoo Valley. What do they sell there? What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was a really great experience. I'm actually from that area, so it was cool to go back, and I felt like I had a good familiarity with the area. The shop was really cool. It was really unique. It was in a closet within this hair salon in Viroqua, Wisconsin.
Wait, it's in a closet in a hair salon?
It was. They have recently moved because there's been such a high demand for it. But when I visited in early spring, it was just, yeah, in this closet within a hair salon. So they were just renting out the space for the time being. And they sold a multitude of things, mostly the actual hemp flower that people could smoke. But they also sold edibles and other tools that they could use to, use the CBD. So, yeah.
Did you find that customers were traveling long distances to get to these CBD products?
Definitely. When I was there just for, the few hours that I was observing, people were coming from hours away. And Tim Murphy, the owner, I asked him, what is the furthest people are coming? And he, he's like, there's no way to know for sure, but he knows that people have come from Milwaukee or Prairie du Chien or up north in Wisconsin, pretty much anywhere in the state people are traveling to his shop and other shops like it.
How are they using the products? What do they want to use them for?
Yeah, from what I could observe from the people shopping in the store and just from other people I've reported on, people are using it for everything, but mainly people are using it to combat things like anxiety or sleep loss or pain. So people are really using it as a medical tool to try to ail any illnesses they might have. But there's probably an endless amount of things that people are using it for.
Well, let's bring in Tim now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, well, Tim Murphy is the one that helped me start my farm last year. And so I know Tim and Kickapoo Kind. I will say we grew last year, and I knew nothing about CBD. I thought it was a snake oil. And let me tell you, after doing it for 18 months, hearing people's testimonials from using the product, I've been converted. I'm a true believer in the CBD.
So, Tim, what do you see on the farming front, the acreage?
Well, I mean, it is difficult because the banking sector, the credit card sector, just the stigma of the plant, it puts up a lot of roadblocks for you, and you have to figure it out. You know, it's a big game right now.
Well, so. Tim, thank you for bringing that. Olivia, what do store owners tell you about why they get into the business?
Tim Murphy from Viroqua, he was telling me that his biggest push, he's been a CBD and a cannabis user most of his life, but his biggest push was he really wanted to support the farmers that were jumping into this new hemp business that Wisconsin legalized last year. And he wanted to give them somewhere where they could sell their product since it is such a new enterprise. So he really wanted to give them an outlet. And him himself, he's also joining the hemp pilot program this year. So that was his biggest reason for doing it, but also just giving an outlet to the Viroqua and Driftless community for somewhere to buy these products that are helping them.
We're talking with Olivia Herkin. She's been writing about CBD products sold in Wisconsin, and she wrote a piece on CBD for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism about the reach of these products. CBD users, why do you use your product? What does it do for you? Are you supportive or cautious about the sale of CBD products when you see them in stores? Do you seek them out or do you avoid them? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Olivia, not everyone apparently is on board with selling CBD products. What kind of criticism did you hear from the owners of Kickapoo Kind?
Yeah, that was a really interesting aspect of reporting on this because I grew up in this area and it has been very liberal, very progressive for most of my life. And so it was surprising when Tim told me that the biggest pushback he was getting was from the more progressive residents. He wasn't really sure why, but he said he was getting more positive feedback from people that maybe weren't in support of CBD or marijuana. So it seems like the tides are really shifting. And people are more worried now just about the regulation of the drug or the substance.
What do we know about regulation and the number of users in Wisconsin when it comes to marijuana and when it comes to CBD products?
Yeah, CBD, since it's so newly legalized, it was hard to find data on that already. But within marijuana use itself, it's just estimated that around 13% of Wisconsin residents had used it. And I think that was from 2013, 2014. So tides have already shifted even immensely from that point. But yeah, that's a pretty small number. And from my reporting, you know, you find out that that may be because people are uneasy to report that. They're not willing to share that information because it still is illegal. But a big thing about the regulation with cannabis is that it is scheduled right now for a Schedule 1 drug, which is on par with heroin and LSD. So it's impossible for the FDA and other entities to even test it to see the effects of CBD and cannabis. So that's probably the biggest takeaway that I got about the regulation of the substance.
What was your feeling about acceptance of using cannabis and whether that had changed over time in the areas you visited for your story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really surprised about everybody's overwhelming acceptance of it. Honestly, it was really tough for me to find anybody who was against it at this point. And I thought that was really interesting. Somebody that I talked to is Charlie Canoe's mom. She's from Appleton, and she kind of spoke about how she herself has seen the tide shift within herself and within people close to her. And how, you know, she used to be kind of against it. And now that she's realizing the benefits that it might have, it's changing her mind and it's changing those around her as well.
You had talked about this one store starting in a closet in a hair salon. Do you see CBD products coming more out of the woodwork in our store settings and in a street front properties?
I definitely do. Yeah. And I think everybody can see that even when I'm not out reporting. You can see, you know, every gas station has a CBD LED light now in the window, and they're selling CBD products. And there's all these stores popping up in communities, small and large, around the state. So I think that was really interesting to see the rapid growth of the substance and the market for it.
You talked to Keegan Murray King, who farms vegetables in the state. What was Keegan's experience with cannabis?
Yeah, Keegan has been a pretty long-term user of cannabis. He started in his teens, and he had a really positive interaction with it immediately. And so he knew, he kind of knew he wanted to get into the agriculture field, and he wanted to be a part of that plant. So he had moved to California after they legalized that when he was out of high school, and he worked on a marijuana farm for quite a while. But he was really unsettled with the way that the industry was regulated over there. So he came back to Wisconsin and wanted to wait for the tides to shift. And I actually met him through Tim Murphy. They're buddies, and they're going to join the hemp program this next year. So, yeah.
What is the hemp program?
The hemp pilot program is a program that Wisconsin is doing right now, and people can register to try to grow hemp through the state. It's really regulated, and it's just for the state to get data on hemp products before they fully release it out to any farmer to grow.
And how does growing hemp, how does that fit into the broader picture of where cannabis is headed in our state?
Yeah, I think it it indicates that there is a shifting of acceptance, a shifting of ideas around cannabis. And I think it just is a testament to the many different ways that we can use the cannabis plants.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us who was concerned that farmers are giving up acreage to grow hemp. Mm-hmm. So perhaps they're growing fewer food crops or grazing fewer animals. Do you see any indications of that?
I don't really have that information. Just from Keegan, who I talked to, who is a farmer, he definitely indicated that he would continue growing both vegetables and cannabis at the same time. It didn't seem like he would have to give up either one and compromise. So
we're talking about the use of CBD here in Wisconsin as we see more stores selling CBD oil and CBD-infused products all over the state. Looking at the marketplace, how it's changed since legalization. Journalist Olivia Herkin is our guide. She wrote a piece for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism in which she did a number of interviews about CBD. CBD users, why do you use this product? What does it do for you? Are you managing a health condition? How does the use of CBD impact your care? Does your business sell these products? How have you seen business change? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the marketplace for CBD products in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hemp and marijuana, both forms of cannabis. Hemp is widely being used for CBD oil, which is used to treat things like childhood epilepsy syndromes that typically don't respond to anti-seizure medications. It may also address anxiety or for patients who suffer chronic pain. And it is big business. The marketplace for CBD is expected to grow to $22 billion in the next several years. That's according to a hemp industry site. So what are you seeing when it comes to CBD in your own community? We're at 800-642-1234. Journalist Olivia Herkin stays with us. She wrote a piece for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, interviewed a number of people about using CBD in their life and what it means. Let's go to the phones now with Rachel joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So the question that I have for you, you just mentioned that the market is supposed to increase by a billion. Do you foresee a flood in the market, which would long-term like reduce prices and potentially like crash it?
Olivia, what do you see in terms of the market?
You know, I wish I had that information. I focused mostly on the profiles of the cannabis users, but just from my own personal experience, I know that people are worried about that in the other states that have legalized. But even so, we aren't sure exactly what the effects might be still to this day.
Rachel, thanks. Let's go to Kate now in Madison. Hi, Kate.
Hello there.
So what's on your mind about CBD?
I use CBD oil for degenerative disc disease, which is where your spine is kind of crumbling and crunching in on itself.
When did you start using it?
A couple of years ago, or actually a year and a half or so ago.
How has it been going?
Otherwise, great. My other choices were opioids and or Valium, because I'm allergic to oxycodone and hydrocodone. And I didn't like that stuff.
How did the conversation? Yeah, how did the conversation go down with your physician about trying out CBD oil?
Well, I had to go through about five physicians just to get off the opioids, because that's all they kept prescribing me. So I did other research and talked to other people and found somebody who makes the stuff and got it from him and went, oh my goodness, this is great.
Kate, thanks so much. Olivia, did you talk with people who are using CBD to manage health conditions?
Oh, yeah. Most of the people that I interviewed for this story were using it to manage a health condition. I would add on that note, though, like she said, like Kate said, most people don't need a prescription for this because of the way it's regulated at this point. CBD, you can just buy it over the counter from any shop. And so they aren't going through their doctors to get that. And that's, yeah, I learned that from most of the people I interviewed.
And you also talked with a 13-year-old cannabis user. What was his experience?
Yeah, Charlie, I was really honored to tell his story. He was born with, I want to make sure I say it right, epidermolysis bullosa. And it's just a disease that makes the skin really fragile and causes blistering. And the disease doesn't allow people that are suffering from it to use NSAIDs or other pain relievers. So Charlie's mom was contacted by cannabis activists and said that they should try CBD. So he uses a CBD ointment on the bandages that he covers his wounds with. And he also takes a CBD oil to combat anxiety that comes with the illness.
So on multiple fronts here, had they tried other pain management techniques in the past?
I believe so. But like I said, he's very limited to what he could use. The other option primarily would be to use a horse tranquilizer, which is, you know, just not something a 13-year-old wants to be using. So, yeah, they were really grateful to be contacted by these people and have this resource and find out about this new substance that might be helping.
Let's go to Leo now, joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Leo.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I need to tell you about a little experiment I did. I've been taking CBD for a couple of weeks now for some sleep problems and lower back pain. And I gave myself a drug test just to see if anything would show up, and it came up presumed positive for THC. So I guess my question is, going forward, do people who take CBD know that they could potentially test positive for THC and the ramifications that come with that?
Leo, thanks. Olivia, how can we be certain what is inside the CBD products?
Yeah, that is a really good point, and it is an issue that I came across while reporting. Because CBD is so new and regulations are still catching up to the market that is growing rapidly, the regulations are, you know, they're not out there to label that, because CBD can contain trace amounts of THC, even if they aren't giving you the psychoactive effects. But because the plants are just derivatives of each other, they can contain each other. So, yeah, I think that is an issue. And going forward, I hope that Wisconsin can combat these issues to help users going forth.
And anecdotally, you heard about the benefits of CBD oil through the people you talked with. One caller who couldn't stay with us wanted to know, are there any studies that can confirm positive health impacts?
Yeah, like I mentioned before, because of the scheduling of the cannabis plants, there really is no possibility of testing it out and proving its benefits. Doctors can, you know, kind of gather anecdotes like I've been doing and go from there and try to come up with a conclusion, but it's nothing concrete. And that's what a lot of activists that I spoke with are actually pushing for before legalization, is lowering the grade of the drug so that people and the FDA are able to study it and find out what exactly it is doing.
Let's go to Israel joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Israel. Are you there? Oh, I don't think we can hear you. What about Jack in Black River Falls? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Jack. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to let you know my wife has multiple sclerosis since about 2001, and the doctors, she also has pain associated with that, and the doctors prescribed opioids multiple times to try and help her with it. And we decided once they opened up a store in Black River Falls that we would try the CBD oil as an alternative. Not sure if it was going to work or not, and I'm not sure how it works, but it works. We buy the cream and the oil. It helps her with her pain in her feet, and it also helps her relax when she gets anxious because of the pain.
Jack, what about the cost? How much do these creams and oils cost?
They're expensive. I wish insurance would cover some of it, but they're $60 for a bottle and $60 for the cream, so that's like $120, and they last, I'd say, roughly about 2 weeks.
Okay, so quite the cost to incur there. Olivia, do you find that the prices are pretty consistent from store to store, or what is the cost in the marketplace for these products?
Yeah, just from the people that I've spoken to who are purchasing this, it might not be exactly the same price, but they are seeing that it is really expensive. Charlie Canoe's family actually, by the end of my reporting, they were telling me that they weren't able to continue their treatment with CBD because it was getting so expensive. They use about one jar on Charlie, and that costs almost around $100, and they use that every other day. So that's a big cost to put on a medical treatment like this. And yeah, lots of other people were telling me that it is a burden to have to pay that much for something that is helping them. So I am seeing that across the board.
Humans aren't the only users here. What did you learn about Bo the dog?
Yeah, that was a really cool story for me to tell. Bo is a dog in Appleton, and he recently had two tumors removed, and he's getting quite old, and so his family didn't really want to go through all of the chemotherapy and radiation because they know what that can do and how it can wear down a body. So they heard through a dog rescuer that CBD can help treat or help alleviate the pain that comes with this illness. And so they've been giving it to him. They, at the time of my reporting, they had just finished their first bottle, and they say his attitude has changed drastically.
Well, Olivia, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Olivia Herkin is a recent graduate of UW-Madison. She wrote a piece for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism about the use of CBD in Wisconsin. You can find a link to it on our morning show page at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.